The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. Okay, we got a great show planned for you today. First hour, we're going to have Eric Potratz on talking about gynecomastia and some alternatives to surgery that can rid you of gyno. Second half of the show, we're going to have Matt Leland on, who is a paleo nutrition expert, trained at Harvard. And we're going to be discussing some of the things that arose as a result of Dr. Lauren Cordain's interview that many people posted on my Facebook challenging some of the things that Cordain talked about. And we're going hopefully get a different point of view. It seems like every paleo guru out there has his or her opinion of how the paleo diet should be applied. So we'll get a different opinion here this afternoon. Okay. My first guest, he's been on the show before. Many of you love when he's on the show because he brings a lot of scientific knowledge with him, and it is none other than Eric Potratz. How you doing, Eric?
Hey, Carl. I'm here.
Okay. That's good news. Gynecomastia plagues most of us, whether we've used anabolic steroids or been fat asses for a period of our lives, which I happen to be guilty of both of those. So I definitely have gyno. If any of you have seen my recent pictures from Phoenix, where I was in the sun flexing, you'll see that I have chesticles that kind of hang a little bit on my chest. I don't like them. I would like to do something about them. We all know that Dr. Chrysler has offered that I come up there and he use his body sculpting wand on me, but I don't know that I want to go under, you know, and have somebody stick a cannula in me and suck fat out. I don't know. I feel like I want to try a different alternative. And Eric and I have talked about this in the past, and he said, well, you know, there is a way. There is a way, isn't there, Eric?
There is, yeah.
And actually, this is not new. Didn't they sell a cream in Europe, and let's not give away the name, that worked on this same premise, using the same hormone to stimulate the shrinking of the breast tissue?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what you said, don't give away the name. Why? Is it?
Well, I don't want to give away the angle here yet. I want to let the interview kind of unfold. First of all,
okay.
Why do those of us who get gyno in the first place?
Yeah, I definitely want to cover that. I want to talk about the kind of the current methods too for combating gyno and why they don't work as well as we, you know, would like them to work.
Right.
And then
which generally is a dose of aromatase inhibitors, correct?
Yeah, aromatase inhibitors and SERMs. And you will cover both of those and why they're not optimal. And then at the end of the show, I do want to mention now that I want to talk about the 16-week anti-gyno challenge, which we just started.
Oh, so good. Maybe I can join in on that. I've got proud chesticles.
Yeah, you can get a picture of those, send them to me, and we'll get you approved for the challenge, Carl.
Okay, there you go. I'm sending my picture from Facebook as we speak.
Okay. So basically, gyno is caused by an imbalance of estrogen and androgens. And this is a little bit of a different theory than what most people are used to hearing. Most people may think that it's simply related to estrogen levels, but it's really not. It's the ratio between estrogen and androgens.
And that makes perfect sense because it's not just estrogen that can cause gyno. I know when you're using certain progestins.
I'm going to talk about that too.
Okay.
That's actually a myth, Carl. I'm going to bust that myth today.
No kidding. You mean the whole prolactin linkage?
Yeah, there's no such thing as progestational gyno, and,
oh,
and there's actually
God.
A study to prove that, but we'll get to that.
Okay,
so,
okay, okay.
But the you know, so the thing to consider here is that someone can have high estrogen and not have any gyno issue because their androgen activity exceeds their estrogen activity. And again, on the flip side, someone can have very low estrogen and have really nasty gyno because their androgen activity is even lower than their estrogen activity. So it has everything to do with ratio. It really has nothing to do with level with your level of estrogen.
Wow, that's amazing.
So yeah, it's and this is kind of a different approach, and I think this is going to help people plan their cycles a little better. And if you know if they're thinking about that ratio while
okay.
they're picking their steroids.
So do you, so you have an opinion for an optimal ratio? Then I take it.
Well, you know, I'm not really talking about hard values. I'm kind of speaking more theoretically and you know, just overall activity. When I say estrogens, I'm just referring to anything that binds to the estrogen receptor.
Okay.
And when I'm talking about androgens, I'm really referring to anything that binds to the androgen receptor. So
okay.
I don't, you know, I'm not really talking about like nanograms per deciliter here.
Gotcha. Okay.
Kind of,
okay.
Yeah, overall activity. There are four factors that can get somebody out of balance. And you may have one factor, or you may have all four factors contributing to a gyno problem. The first one is simply the aromatization of androgens to estrogen, just too much conversion of, say, testosterone to estrogen. Okay, that's probably the most simple thing that people are most familiar with.
Right, because that's going to throw the ratio off immediately.
Right, right. And then aromatase inhibitor will prevent that. Now, the second cause is a steroid that binds very strongly to SHBG, steroid hormone binding globulin, and releases freely circulating estrogen. So this really has nothing to do with total estrogen. Your total estrogen stays the same, but your ratio of bound estrogen to free estrogen, you know, you have more free estrogen. So if you take a steroid that offsets estrogen from SHBG, you now have more bioactive estrogen that's going to have a more proliferative effect on breast tissue. So that's something else to consider. Most steroids that do that are methylated compounds that have that offsetting effect.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is interesting because like a steroid like Winnie, you know, Winstrol, which doesn't aromatize, it can cause gyno issues in some people because it has such a strong SHB binding effect, which can offset that estrogen. So that's the second cause. Now, a third factor that may be coming into play here are steroids which bind directly to the estrogen receptor. So,
which are these?
Well, this class of compounds actually is a lot bigger than what most people probably think. A good example is Anadrol. Okay, it's probably binding directly to the estrogen receptor.
But Anadrol is a DHT derivative.
Well, it's a DHT that's modified in the A ring, which gives it some binding affinity to the estrogen receptor.
Darn.
And it's a similar case with Superdrol. This compound, based on its molecular structure, based on its modification, it's probably binding directly to the estrogen receptor and initiating an estrogenic effect.
Wow. Wow.
So, and this is probably why we see gyno fairly quickly with some of these compounds, and also why we see a lot of bloat, you know, intracellular water retention, you know, so in blood pressure increase.
Yeah.
Probably related to that estrogenic effect.
Eric, we need to take our first commercial break real quick. Let's stay right here. So we're leaving off with androgens that actually fool the estrogen receptor by binding to it and stimulating estrogenic effects. Anadrol, I would have lost the bet on that one, man. That one I would have lost. Okay, we're talking with Eric Potratz about techniques, methods to rid yourself of gyno without going under the knife. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You don't have to be beautiful.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein and the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage. And it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Nothing ruins hard chest work than chesticles. I'm looking at my pictures on Facebook. I'm really going to send you these pictures. I want to be in on this contest, okay?
Okay.
I mean, I've got a great chest, and then I have these two sagging nipples, whatever you want to call them. And they're just disgusting. I'm sure the girls don't look at my picture and think they're great looking. I sure don't like them. I mean, I have to ask Elisa what she thinks of them. I don't think she's too kind to say anything.
I don't think women notice gyno like us men do, Carl.
You really think so?
Yeah, women don't really have an eye for it until you ask them to look for it. It's weird.
Yeah, I hate my gyno. Okay, so yeah. there are compounds out there that would fool you that will cause gyno because they act like estrogen they have an affinity to the estrogen receptor.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's just something to keep in mind. I mean, it's I actually got this new study I was just looking at this morning, and the new technology we have now that scientists have to test these compounds is so much more advanced than it was, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
And we can actually see exactly what receptor these steroids are binding to now, which is really cool. So,
yeah.
The Anadrol is on there, and actually quite a few steroids have at least some binding affinity for the estrogen receptor. For instance, the original 4-AD had a binding affinity for the estrogen receptor.
Did it really? And you know what? That is when my gyno got the worst, when I was using transdermal for AD, and I was rubbing it on my chest. I was rubbing it, not on my nipples, but I was rubbing it on my upper chest and my upper abdomen.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, yeah. I mean, it was a great bulker, though, is the thing, and because with that estrogenic activity, you get that additional growth hormone and IGF-1 effect, you know, and the glycogen loading and everything. So it's definitely a good compound for putting on mass.
Yeah, if you want to look like Meatloaf in Fight Club.
Know who that is.
Oh, forget about it. Okay. All right, so anyway, what other culprits are there lurking that are...
Well, I think we left off. That was the third factor, something binding directly to the estrogen receptor.
Right.
And then the fourth factor is basically a steroid that lacks true androgenic activity, that lacks sufficient androgenic activity to counter estrogenic activity. So a good example here is nandrolone, which is a progestational compound.
Right.
It's very low on the androgenic rating. So when you introduce that into the system and you suppress your testosterone level, which is a much more androgenic compound, you're basically creating that imbalance now. So whatever estrogen you had in your system is now sort of able to freely roam and freely exert its proliferative effects on breast tissue because that androgenic effect isn't there to counter that estrogen from the nandrolone.
Right.
Now here's something interesting. Trenbolone is another thing, as another example. Trenbolone is considered a very androgenic compound.
Right.
Like compared to testosterone, right? It's several times more androgenic.
Well, compared to just about anything, wouldn't you say? It's compared to, I mean, isn't it?
Well, here's the catch, though. If you compare it to DHT, it's not very androgenic.
You're right.
And it cannot convert to DHT. So really, it lacks that true strong androgenic affinity for the androgen receptor because almost nothing beats true DHT. So when you take trenbolone, and if you have enough estrogen in your system with the trenbolone in your system, the trenbolone's not going to be able to counter that estrogenic effect, and you can see gyno from tren.
Okay.
And that's where it's coming from.
Gotcha.
It actually has nothing to do with the
prolactin
receptor.
Right. Because it used to be...
Prolactin's different than progesterone. I mean, there's the progesterone receptor, which really has nothing to do with prolactin, but that's... you know, my point here is that if you had cellular breast tissue and you introduced a progesterone in there, that breast tissue will not grow. It needs estrogen present.
Right.
So that's sort of why I'm saying that progestational gyno is just sort of
non-existent. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So,
all right. So, and what about? I mean, we're talking about things that people are using knowingly. What about things like xenoestrogens that we find in plastic bottles and we drink all this water? I mean, those of us who are drinking 1 or 2 gallons a day, we're consuming some amount of xenoestrogens. They act on the estrogen receptor. And those people who are still in the dark about soy, you know, the soy industry has it both ways. They say, well, the phytoestrogens in soy really don't have the kind of affinity for the estrogen receptor that estrogen does. But then they also say, hey, women who are going through menopause should take soy because it acts like estrogen. So which is it, Mr. Soy Industry?
Yeah, exactly. So that, I guess that would be a fifth factor is environmental.
Estrogens, environmental estrogens, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So and you see a lot of gyno in this day and age. I mean, it's everywhere. A lot of guys who don't even, that have never touched an androgen in their life have gyno.
Mm-hmm.
So now let me ask you this question. Are some people just prone to gyno? Do you have to have the kind of breast tissue that can be activated in order to even develop gyno?
Well, some people distribute more fat around their chest, you know, and that's going to cause a, you know, lipomastia and more fat storage. But I would think that, you know, the glandular tissue is just as responsive in any male from one to the next. I mean...
What percentage of gyno is actually just fat, where if guys just lean, like if you got totally shredded, your whole body, that you just end up with puffy nipples and not all that extra fat, too?
Well, that's the thing, yeah. That's the difference between, you know, the pseudo-gyno and actual gyno. You know, actual gyno is usually considered the glandular form. which is what the Andro Heart is most effective against, you know, and that's what will go away the fastest too. The fat tissue takes a lot longer to go away. It requires, you know, the intense dieting and exercise. You actually have to reduce your total body fat percentage to make that go away.
Okay. Okay.
So,
all right.
But gland, you know, it's very estrogen responsive.
Right.
So
now we've identified the things that stimulate gynecomastia. Is gynecomastia a forever thing? Once you have it, you've got it, and that's it. Or is it really something that you can do something about?
Well, you definitely can, because it's very hormone responsive. I don't want to trail off. I have a tendency to trail off sometimes and get, you know, tangential, but I want to mention cortisol real quick, because this is interesting.
Really? Okay. Because cortisol definitely has the ability to cause spot fat accumulation in the body, specific areas of the body. Does cortisol also act on chest fat?
It does, and here's what it does. It will actually increase aromatase activity, which you would think would make the gyno worse, right?
Right.
But because of its catabolic effect, it actually will inhibit gyno growth, and it can actually reverse gyno growth to some extent. So that's just kind of a neat tidbit. You could try to topically apply hydrocortisone cream as an anti-gyno addition, you know, to your AndroHeart protocol. So,
okay.
Yeah, but if you do that, you know, I would keep it limited to 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, because you can actually catabolize your collagen in your skin. You don't want to do that. You know, you don't want to stay on the cream for too long. So, so I think we covered the four factors that contribute to gyno.
Right.
I will say that basically any steroid that does not convert to actual DHT is going to have
some potential,
a lesser androgenic effect.
Right, and it's going to have some potential to cause gyno, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit higher potential there with anything that doesn't convert to DHT.
Okay. The only true DHT anabolic steroid out there is masterone, correct?
Well, that's a DHT derivative, and that actually doesn't convert to DHT. It's been chemically modified, so it's a little different, and it's not as androgenic as DHT.
Really? But it's used as a hardening agent, correct?
It is, and it's effective for that, but if you're trying to go on a gyno reversal cycle, masterone would not work as well as DHT.
Hmm.
And, yeah, so...
So is there any true anabolic steroid out there that is just purely DHT?
Just DHT. And, of course, you know, testosterone with maybe an aromatase inhibitor would have...
But that depends on the level of 5-alpha reductase activity in your body, too, correct?
Yeah. So you're relying on the conversion.
Has your research shown any linkage between the type of skin that people have and their ability to have higher levels of 5-AR? People with greater degree of melanin in their skin tend to convert more testosterone to DHT than fair-skinned people. Any evidence of that?
I
have a suspicion, but I'm just curious.
Yeah. I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
So as far as methods for, you know, current popular methods for trying to get rid of gyno, I guess we can start with aromatase inhibitors. And I won't spend too much time on outlining protocols here because a ton of information is available online. I want to try to present new information in our short time here. So, basically, we've got Arimidex and Letrozole, which are the non-suicide-based aromatase inhibitors. They work definitely very well for reducing estrogen. The only problem with them is that they can have a rebound effect because they can bind to the aromatase, inhibit estrogen formation while they're bound to the aromatase, but then they can disassociate once you stop taking that drug, and you can have a high level of circulating aromatase in the body,
mm-hmm.
which can cause that estrogenic rebound.
Right.
So that's something to be aware of with those compounds. The next class of aromatase inhibitors are steroidal aromatase inhibitors, which are known as suicide-based inhibitors, because once they bind to the aromatase enzyme, they're permanently bound until that aromatase is excreted from the body. So the benefit here is that when you take a steroidal suicide-based inhibitor, your estrogen will be suppressed even after you get off the drug. It sort of has a long-term effect.
Right.
Because of
how long before the landscape of aromatase goes back to your body's normal level?
I would say months. I mean, if you do a 1 month cycle of you know one of these compounds, I'd say estrogen.
Name a compound that you're talking about.
Well, we're talking about formistane. We're talking about 6-bromo androstenedione, right? 6-bromo androstenedione is the new finangled supplement, kind of being popularized right now.
Right. Right.
ATD.
All of these wreak havoc on the libido, by the way, too.
Well, yeah, and we have aromasin. I mean, there's a bunch of compounds in that category. And that's one of the issues too, Carl, is that they're very, very powerful and probably more powerful, more anti-aromatase activity than we need. You don't need to reduce your estrogen 90% to reverse gyno.
Right.
And I'll talk about why as soon as we get to the Androhard.
Okay.
Here's a couple other interesting things about these types of compounds, is that they actually can inhibit 5-alpha reductase activity too.
Really?
So as they're reducing estrogen, they're also reducing the potent androgenic compounds in your body.
Right,
so
the DHT.
It's like taking one step forward and one step back.
Right.
It's like a double-edged sword with these compounds. So, and there's also some of them that have an actual intrinsic anti-androgenic effect. Like formistane, an ATD, for instance, will bind to the androgen receptor and have a weaker action than other androgens. So they're almost sort of, like I said, have an anti-androgenic activity. And, you know, the combined effect here is, like you said, a reduction in libido. Too much suppression of estrogen, so you're going to harm your arterial health by damaging your cholesterol profile. You're going to compromise your joint health, and just a number of side effects.
Never mind something that's never discussed when people talk about aromatase inhibitors, which is aromatase in the brain, which is neuroprotective.
Yeah.
If you've ever been in a car accident when you hit your head, or if somebody ever hit you in the head, if you're an MMA fighter, you should never take an aromatase inhibitor unless you have super physiological levels of testosterone and you're just reducing your aromatase level to a physiological level, because it's aromatase that protects the brain from injury. When you're struck in the brain, the body immediately starts to sacrifice androgens to convert to estradiol, because estradiol stimulates something on every cell called FAF. Fibroblast activation factor, which immediately shuts inflammation down. Boom, just shuts it right down. And this is why men develop neurological disorders 3 and 4 times more often than women, until women go through menopause and then they catch up with us, because of the protective effects of estradiol to the brain. And, you know, none of us think about that when we're trying to, I want to get rid of my gyno, or I want more muscle. And it's like, well, wait a minute. What good is all that muscle and that perfect chest if your brain doesn't work anymore? So think about that next time you're going on a heavy, aromatase inhibitor cycle to try to, you know, to try to combat estrogen. I mean, don't push estrogen down in the dirt. Men need some amount of estrogen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So
we have to take a break.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry about that. When we come back, where do you want to pick up from? So we've addressed a lot of different things now. Do you want to talk about how?
We'll talk about SERMs. We'll talk about SERMs a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk about selective estrogen receptor modulators. We're talking with Eric Potratz. Visit primordialperformance.com today. Some of the best supplements. Eric works very hard not to take somebody else's stuff and put his label on it, but to come up with very, very original supplements like the new Androhard series. Eric has broken ground in delivering these hormonal compounds in high bioactive levels to your body. Check out primordialperformance.com. We'll be right back.
Into Introducing AgeForce Testo 100, the first testosterone booster in a transdermal time-release patch. Produced in FDA-certified labs, Testo 100 bypasses digestion and delivers its testosterone-boosting formula directly into the bloodstream. That's a huge advantage over oral testosterone supplements. Testo 100 patches raise testosterone levels throughout the day to elevate libido, energy, and maximize muscle-building, fat-burning effects without suppressing normal testosterone production. For a limited time, Superhuman Radio listeners can save 50% off Testo 100 by going to AgeForce.com and using the coupon code SHR4. Don't wait. Go to AgeForce.com and use code SHR4 and save 50% now.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Muscle and joint pain can slow your progress to a screeching halt. That's why I use Kodiak Chiropractic Cream. Kodiak Cream won't hinder muscle growth while reducing pain and inflammation because Kodiak Cream uses only non-pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory agents proven to halt inflammation and relieve pain instantly. Kodiak Cream is great if you suffer from fibromyalgia or osteoarthritis as well. Get your Kodiak Cream today by clicking the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Kodiak Cream. It's the only thing I use to manage pain, and you should too.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels, but most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, MahLer.com. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Just remind everybody out there, there is a limited supply of the free samples of Kodiak Cream, which halts pain without any NSAIDs. Great stuff. I love this stuff. I didn't even plan on using it. I tried it when I pulled my soleus muscle sprinting one morning, and it made the pain go away literally in minutes. Go to superhumanradio.com at the bottom of the page. Click and order a free sample. You don't have to pay for shipping. You just put your information there. They'll send you a free sample. It's about 6 applications, so you can really get a good run at it and see if it works for you. Kodiak Cream, it's great stuff. Limited time. We're going to take that banner ad down pretty soon once they're out of samples. My guest this hour, Eric Potratz. Later in the show, Matt Lalonde, talking about paleo nutrition. Okay, SERMs, selective estrogen receptor modulators. I got to believe that SERMs have the potential to actually cause gyno if they stimulate estrogenic activity in certain tissue. How do they know the difference?
Well, Clomid actually has that problem. Clomid is actually a combination of two different drugs. It has a cis and a trans isomer, and maybe this is more information than people want to hear, but the net effect is a suppression of gyno, but it is sort of like taking two steps forward and one step back in that case. I would say Clomid is probably the worst choice for countering gyno. Tamoxifen or Novadex is a more pure anti-estrogen. It would be a better choice to use for an anti-gyno effect. And then Tormethine is an even better choice, in my opinion. It's a bit safer, and it also is pretty much a pure anti-estrogen in breast tissue. So the issue, though, with SERMs, and I think people who follow me and in my writing, they know that I'm not a fan of SERMs. I've written a 60-point referenced article on all the side effects. There's some implications for prostate cancer, liver cancer, ocular toxicity, reduction in sex drive, just a negative effect on mood. They have a number of side effects that would make most people want to stay away from them. So I personally don't use SERMs anymore for those reasons. But they've had some mediocre effects as far as the research goes in reversing gyno. They can definitely stop the irritational symptoms of gyno pretty quickly. But as far as actually reversing existing gyno, they're marginally effective for that. I've seen it results maybe being 20, 30, 40% being typical. Some people don't respond to them at all. So that basically wraps up SERMs. So I guess,
now,
are you still there, Carl? I heard a noise. I thought it disconnected.
No. I'm here. Which brings me to the European solution. Many, many years ago on the Mind and Muscle forum back then, or Avant Labs, I forget if it had made the transition, somebody started talking about a topical DHT cream that is sold in Europe, but ironically not here in the United States. Do you remember the name of that stuff?
Yeah, it's Endactrum.
Okay.
It was a DHT. It might have been a gel.
Yeah.
And that's probably, I think some people are familiar with that. I know that I've seen those forum posts kind of pop up sporadically. They did a number of studies with the topical DHT, and actually the studies showed a pretty positive effect in reversing gyno, about as effective as SERMs, and in some cases more effective, and obviously without the side effects. But here's the interesting thing with those topically applied DHT studies. The people that did not respond to the cream and their gyno had no response, they tested the blood levels of DHT in those subjects, and they did not have an increase in DHT from the DHT cream.
Which is good. That means it wasn't getting systemic, in other words.
Well, not good, though, because the subjects that did respond favorably and had very aggressive regression of gyno, those subjects had a much higher increase in systemic DHT levels.
Wow.
So what this tells us is, A, the subjects who weren't responding either weren't putting on their cream or they were not absorbing it very well. So you need the systemically high DHT levels to get a good response, and it makes sense because DHT is an aromatase inhibitor. So it's actually also an estrogen blocker. We'll get to that in a minute. But DHT will inhibit the aromatase enzyme. And it works a little differently. It's not a competitive inhibitor. It actually reduces production of aromatase,
right?
Just right at the source where it's produced. So it doesn't have that rebound effect.
Right.
Androsterone is actually an equally potent aromatase inhibitor as DHT. And just for information's sake, androstenedione is the most potent 5-alpha-reduced aromatase inhibitor.
Really? Androstenedione converts to DHT?
No. Androstene, not androstene.
Okay.
The 5-alpha-reduced form of...
Stane, S-T-A-N-E, you're saying, right?
Yeah. So that 5-alpha-reduced form is a very powerful aromatase inhibitor. None of these are all naturally occurring, though. These are all the compounds of the body. These are the natural anti-estrogenic androgens in the body. And none of them are as powerful as something like Formistane or ATD, you know, which,
right.
which is like many times more powerful and way more than you need, in my opinion. So anyhow, the study clearly showed that you need systemically high androgen levels to reverse gyno. And to back that up, there was a study done on injectable DHT for gyno. And they found that it worked even better than the topical treatment. So these subjects, within 4 months, had, and in fact all subjects responded in this case, the subjects had 68 to 78% reduction in gyno in 4 months.
Wow.
So very positive response to the DHT.
Now, were there any side effects, unwanted side effects from pure DHT?
No unwanted side effects were recorded. I mean, DHT, the only side effect potentially is maybe accelerated hair loss. But,
right.
I mean, in my opinion, that side effect is sort of over-exaggerated. You know, if you're eating healthy and you're not, you don't have the metabolic syndrome, and, you know, you should be able to fight that off unless you're just extremely sensitive to androgenic hair loss. But,
right.
At any rate, the subjects all responded, which is excellent. And when they continued the study, they did it for another 4 months, for a total of 8 months on the injectable DHT. Subjects had a 90% reversal of gyno. So in my mind, that's essentially complete reversal of gyno. There's always going to be a small gland underneath the nipple. That's just normal physiology. So this is essentially complete reversal of gyno with the application of 5-alpha reduced androgens.
Wow.
Which is very cool.
Okay. Now, we have to take our last commercial break. When we come back, you're going to tie this all in on where the AndroHard comes in and the challenge, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The Triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the Triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of Triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me, and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it, and you'll be a believer too.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at Orbit Nutrition. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
Finally, a Bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of.
buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Just want to remind everybody, opresource.net still has the best authentic peptides in the world. In fact, their PT-141 was the PT-141 that was used in the magazine article. I believe it was in Men's Health when they were experimenting with this powerful natural aphrodisiac that affects the melanocortin system in the body. OPResource.net. Use the coupon code SUPERHUMAN25, SUPERHUMAN25, to save 25% off IGF-1, Mechano Growth Factor, you name it, they've got it. OPResource.net. My guest this hour, Eric Potratz, later in the show, Matt Lalonde. Okay, Eric, so how does this all tie into AndroHard? Does AndroHard have DHT in it? No, that's a loaded question. I'm just kidding around.
It has androsterone, and I want to tie that up real quick. We left off right before the commercial. As far as DHT, you know, in androsterone, they have a good solid anti-aromatase activity. They reduce estrogen around 40-50% at the dose required for the anti-gyno effect. So you can reverse for gyno without a total suppression of estrogen, like I said before. The other reason why I think DHT is so effective, you know, and all these 5-alpha reduced androgens are so effective at reducing gyno, is because they have a direct estrogen blockage effect. And here's the highlight of the entire interview, Carl, in the next 30 seconds. This is what happens.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me write this down. Good. Go. I'm
okay. Okay. What happens, it took scientists a little while to figure out exactly how androgens are blocking the effects of estrogens, because androgens don't bind very well to the estrogen receptor. What happens is when androgens bind to their androgen receptor, and that receptor translocates from the cellular membrane into the nucleus in the center of the cell, it takes up a certain amount of space. It sort of takes up its seat in the nucleus, right?
Right.
Now, when estrogen binds to its receptor on the cellular wall and it translocates and migrates into the center of the cell in the nucleus, there is no room for it to exert its estrogenic effect because androgens are bound to their receptor and they have already taken up their space in the nucleus. So it's almost a physical space issue in where androgens are having their transcriptional effect in the nucleus. So this is really cool. And this is where it's blocking estrogen from having its estrogenic effect.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that is interesting. So because the space isn't available, it's not doing anything directly to the aromatase. It's just saying it's taking up the space that the aromatase would take up.
Yes, for its estrogen blockage effect. It's almost as if when you take 5-alpha-reduced androgens, you get a aromatase inhibitor effect and you get an estrogen blockage effect, which is kind of like taking a SERM and an aromatase inhibitor at the same time, but without the side effects.
Gotcha.
So, anyhow, coming back to AndroHard, we actually created AndroHard partially for this purpose. The dose that you get with AndroHard will match the androgenic activity that was used in this injectable DHT study. So the recommended dose of AndroHard, which is 3 soft gels twice a day, will give you the same androgenic activity to see these anti-gyno effects.
So that'll help me with the gyno. What else will the AndroHard do for me? Will it also increase any musculature? Will it help me in the gym as well?
Well, yeah, it definitely will. It's not a big mass builder, obviously, because you know it doesn't have that estrogen component. But it can definitely harden your physique. It can help you get rid of fat. It can increase strength. So it has those benefits, and definitely has the libido benefits as well.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna take the challenge. I really am. I'm gonna put myself out there, especially because I know that this is not a methylated product. It's not going to hurt my liver, which my liver is very important to me. Interestingly enough, the word liver starts with the word live. So I'm a big proponent of living and keeping my liver intact. I'm gonna take the challenge. I have pictures that are about a year old. Okay. My gyno is still pretty much the same as it is in these pictures. No, it's not even a year old. I take that back. Maybe 7 months old that I took. They're up on my Facebook, so they're not manufactured. They've been up there forever. I am going to email those pictures. Where do I send my pictures?
Well, if you go to our website, primordialperformance.com, you'll see a forum thread in there. It's at the main forum section on the website. Explains all the details. You send it to Eric@primordialperformance. That's my email address.
Okay.
And basically all we're doing is we're just verifying that it's a glandular type of gyno rather than like a just an obesity-related type of gyno.
And mine may be obesity-related, so you may determine that I'm not a candidate. So I'll do that first. I'll send those pictures to you first so you can look at them.
Yeah, so if you're approved, then basically the way the challenge works is you go and buy the AndroHard, you use it for 4 months, and then at the end we will judge who had the most progress, and whoever
the greatest reduction in breast tissue from start to finish. So in other words,
the greatest regression will win, and they'll get a $500 shopping spree, you know, product credit with our website.
Oh, that's wonderful! But more importantly, they won't have chesticles anymore. More importantly, there's the winner right there.
And here's what we're doing to back this up. If people who do this challenge, if they follow our guidelines and they use AndroHard only at the recommended dose, you know, and we have a couple other, a few other guidelines to follow, but if they do that and they don't get at least 50% reduction in their gyno, we'll give them their money back 100%.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Why do you always do money back guarantees? I mean,
we only have to fulfill about 1% of the. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, it rarely do the products perform, you know, where they rarely.
I mean, you know what? Very few companies are that confident in their products. I know only one other company besides you that offers money back guarantee. It's my friend Paul Becker at Earth Pulse. But you always offer money back guarantees, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is an extended guarantee. This is basically saying, you know, if you use four bottles of AndroHard and you don't get the anti-gyno results, we'll back that up with the money-back guarantee.
Okay. All right. Very cool. Very cool. Okay. All right. So people need to go to primordialperformance.com, go to the forum, and there is a forum thread that says, what, gyno?
Yeah. 16-week anti-gyno challenge.
Okay. So I need to go there and log in, first of all. Send my pictures to you to make sure that my titties are saggy enough to qualify for this competition, and hopefully I will. And who knows? Maybe I'm not acceptable. Maybe it's all fat, and that's not a bad thing either. If you determine that this is just fat, then I just need to lean out, and I'm good with that as well.
Well, the way you describe it, I mean, it sounds like it could be real gyno, but
I gotta believe it's gyno. First of all, being 300 pounds for a large portion of my life, I had a lot of circulating estrogen. Number one, and probably very low androgen levels. Number two, I have experimented with lots of the things that you've talked about that cause gyno. And in high dose, at one point in time, I was using 2 grams of testosterone and a gram of DECA a week. And if that doesn't give you gyno, then I don't know what will. And I wasn't using any aromatase inhibitors either.
Well, okay. Well, so that's basically it. You know, and we are helping people. We're giving them a 25% off coupon if they're approved for the gyno challenge.
Cool, cool.
So I'll save them some money.
All right, this sounds good. Go to primordialperformance.com. Great information about gyno on this show. If you're using any type of performance enhancers, you may be at risk of gyno more so than you think. Listen to this show if you haven't already. All right, Eric, I want to thank you so much for, A, being a sponsor of Superhuman Radio, and, B, for doing this interview today.
Yeah, thank you, Carl.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, bye.
All right, so there you go. Go to primordialperformance.com today and join the anti-gyno revolution. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Matt Lalonde on the show educating us about some different points of view on paleo nutrition. We'll be right back.
Внимание, дамы и господа, через несколько секунд выйдут на сцену Шпулеметья. Слабонервных беременных и детей просим удалиться из зала. Остальным лечь на пол и задержать дыхание!
Bin ich ziemlich gut drauf, ziemlich schick ansetzen, Hut auf. Rolex tick, man, seh ich gut aus. Hol mir den Kick, ich absolut drauf. Hier, yeah, wieder mein Solo-Ausritt in den Pose-Outfit. Mach mich hier nett, mach mich brett, fett, rauch, shit, Hose, die Body mit Pose-Ausschnitt. Komm in den Club und genieß den Ausblick. Die braucht Schmuck und die ist auch schick. Ich seh nur hoch, wenn ich jeder ausblick. Meine Frau guckt was denn.
Branched chain amino acids have been shown to be as powerful as weak anabolic steroids in building muscle and burning fat. BCAAs will increase mitochondria biogenesis and size. The three amino acids in BCAAs pass right from the lining of the stomach directly into the bloodstream and begin flipping the switches for muscle growth immediately. The best BCAAs are at TrueProtein.com. Unlike others, they mix instantly in water. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Go to TrueProtein.com and get your BCAAs.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Muscle and joint pain can slow your progress to a screeching halt. That's why I use Kodiak Chiropractic Cream. Kodiak Cream won't hinder muscle growth while reducing pain and inflammation, because Kodiak Cream uses only non-pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory agents proven to halt inflammation and relieve pain instantly. Kodiak Cream is great if you suffer from fibromyalgia or osteoarthritis as well. Get your Kodiak Cream today by clicking the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Kodiak Cream. It's the only thing I use to manage pain, and you should too.
Introducing AgeForce Testo 100, the first testosterone booster in a transdermal time-release patch. Produced in FDA-certified labs, Testo 100 bypasses digestion and delivers its testosterone-boosting formula directly into the bloodstream. That's a huge advantage over oral testosterone supplements. Testo 100 patches raise testosterone levels throughout the day to elevate libido, energy, and maximize muscle-building, fat-burning effects without suppressing normal testosterone production. For a limited time, Superhuman Radio listeners can save 50% off Testo 100 by going to ageforce.com and using the coupon code SHR4. Don't wait. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use code SHR4 and save 50% now.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse. CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio. Muscle building magic happens when you put the right stack together. Iron Mag Labs takes the guesswork out of stacking with Methadrol Extreme. Methadrol Extreme combines three of the most powerful legal anabolics in the world: dimethazine, superdrol, and decadrol. The combination of these three agents will ratchet up strength while packing on slabs of muscle and dissolving fat. Don't wait too long, because Methadrol Extreme will only be available for a limited time and is sure to disappear quickly. Go to IronMagLabs.com today and get your bottle of Methadrol Extreme.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We talk a lot about ancestral diets and Paleolithic styles of eating on this show. You know, like so many things, there is just not one way to skin a cat. There's lots of alternatives. And my next guest is a PhD trained at Harvard. His name is Matt Lalonde. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
And you were recommended to have on the show, actually by a few different listeners, because it seems like, so many things in life, the Paleolithic style of eating is becoming very popular now. It's becoming a buzzword. You hear it in mainstream media. Soon, Dr. Oz will be talking about it and taking credit for inventing it. But everybody you talk to has a different slant on paleo nutrition.
If you talk to individuals like the esteemed Dr. Lauren Cordain, you'll find that he is really not a fan of carbohydrates, to say the least, and you know, and vegetables exclusively as your carbohydrate source. If you talk to individuals, and you name them, you know, you have those who are of the camp that fruit is evil, those who are of the camp that fruit is necessary. You have those who are of the camp who say carbohydrates have to be included. Some say they don't have to be included. And all of a sudden you think to yourself, oh my goodness, there's not one way to apply the paleo diet. Are you noticing this?
Well, yeah, and it's not surprising to me. Human beings are, you know, multivariate, affected by their genes, their gene expression, their environment. Environment actually infects gene expression. And the way that you want to implement this will depend on a variety of things, more or less your training, your lifestyle. So I would not expect to see just, you know, one-size-fits-all application here. And I'll go ahead and say, I think the reason why people may have recommended me on the show is I don't have any books to sell. I don't have any DVDs. I'm just an educator. This is an organic chemist's perspective on what I initially consider to be soft science. So, you know, when I speak, it's, you know, I don't have to worry about not stepping on other people's toes. I don't have to worry about not selling my books or contradicting what I've already said. I am interested not in having the right answers, or not in my answers being right, actually, but I'm interested in the right answers.
I got you. There's a big difference between the two. You're absolutely
right.
Yeah,
very big difference. And unfortunately, in this field, I find that there's a lot of people that refuse to change their minds because they've written it in their books. And from a hardcore scientific perspective, that is absolute nonsense. I mean, a good scientist, when shown evidence of to the contrary, will change their position.
Okay, now you mentioned something a second ago that's a belief of mine. There, I tend to believe, as opposed to the Paleolithic diet, I believe in the ancestral diet because of polymorphisms, because of maybe food availability in different regions of the world. Your genetics may have evolved under conditions. So this one-size-fits-all approach that, oh, well, this is how Paleolithic man ate. Well, that's probably how Paleolithic man ate who lived in this region of the world, but not necessarily in that region of the world. What would you say to that? Do you think that polymorphisms play a role in how you should be choosing the food you eat?
I would agree that there are some adaptations that have occurred. You know, one of the famous ones that's put out there all the time are European herders that got adapted to lactose by producing lactase or keeping lactase activated later on in life. So yes, depending on your lineage, where you come from, you are going to have, you know, a different micronutrient ratio that's going to, you know, be best for you. But then that can also change depending on epigenetics, what your grandmother ate, what your mother ate.
Bingo.
That's going to affect how you are going to process food. If you go a little bit further than the grandmother epigenetically, it doesn't come all that. The effect is not all that great. And then the type of training. I mean, would I put an endurance athlete on a low-carb diet? Absolutely not. There's no way.
Why?
Well,
why? I mean, the reason I'm not being, you know.
No, let me tell you
flippant.
Why.
Because there's those who will say that that gluconeogenesis is the most intelligent method of supplying the body with glucose.
Yes. So there is no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. Glucose is essential, but your body can make it, so you don't have to obtain it from the diet. The problem is that gluconeogenesis is fairly slow, is not a very fast process. You can regenerate liver glycogen for, you know, over a period of 24 hours, but if you're running a marathon in 3 hours or less, simply not enough.
Gotcha.
And you are running that at 6 minute miles, very high intensity, you need to burn sugar while supplementing with some amino acids to make sure that cortisol is not going to munch into your muscle mass. So what happens if you try to do this kind of work, and I actually ran the experiment on myself, I keep telling people I'd be a lot healthier if I didn't have to run these experiments to prove a point. They actually don't mean much because they're only observational experiments of N=1 where the observer is the experimenter, so they're horrible, but there's still one data point, one, you know, case study, if you will. So I started doing high-intensity training on a very low-carbohydrate diet, only meat, vegetables, and animal fat. And what happened is that cortisol started rising higher and higher. The reason for that is that cortisol is involved in this response that tells the liver, hey, you need to upregulate gluconeogenesis. Like, you need to turn this on much faster now. And cortisol is going to go get some amino acids, some glucogenic amino acids, by degrading muscle mass. And it does that because there's, you know, a limit to glycolysis in itself, especially when glucose is in short supply. If your cortisol levels keep rising, they'll eventually level off. And at that point, you might think, well, hey, I'm fine. They're not going any higher. But what's going to happen then is that your testosterone levels are going to hit the floor, your free testosterone levels. And if you look at overtraining and something called a free testosterone to cortisol ratio,
right,
you're going to find that that ratio is a very good indication of whether or not you're overtrained. And if you do high-intensity exercise on a low-carbohydrate diet or when you're carbohydrate-restricted, your testosterone is going to hit the floor. Not a good deal. And cortisol is going to be very high.
So, and are there instances where sugar is acceptable?
Well, if by sugar you mean table sugar?
No, I mean, look, I remember when I first started training a decade ago, the step du jour was, 50 grams of protein, 80 grams of dextrose, some creatine monohydrate right after your workout. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a couple years. I don't know that it benefited me, but I was using just very, very fast-acting sugars at that point in time. Today, I don't do that because I'm opposed to sugar because of its glucose signaling leads to cellular senescence. So I'm thinking, well, I'm 53 now. Aging better is more important to me than getting bigger.
Yeah, there's a lot of confounding factors there. So by sugar, this time you meant dextrose, and it's very important to make that distinction. When you say sugar, are you talking about carbohydrates in general? Are you talking about dextrose? Are you talking about fructose? Because those
I'm talking about simple sugars.
So. Yes, so in this case you said dextrose, and dextrose is glucose. Now let's say you are running a marathon. Your muscles are burning a lot of glucose, and
right,
it would be a smart idea to replenish glucose or to feed glucose to the muscles. So having dextrose post-workout or during the race is a good idea if you're talking about athletes that are, say, involved in, for example, CrossFit competitions. They just performed one workout. They've got another one coming up an hour, 2 hours later. No time for digestion. You know, you got to get the simple pre-digested carbohydrates and amino acids in there, not protein and complex carbohydrates. Those will come in after the trial is done and you've got time to eat and digest. So they have a place, a time and a place. And then, of course, there's the whole thing about fructose. Does that have a time and a place? Probably so. The amount of, let's say, glycogen or glucose that the liver can store is about 400 grams of the numbers that you throw around. You can find severe glycogen depletion articles that say it's a little bit higher. Other people's will say it's infinite, but that's in a diseased state where it's infinite. Whereas the muscle is about 1,600 calories. So you could say, well, I should be eating glucose to or dextrose to fructose ratio that's about 4-1. But the problem is that when you consume fructose, it gets into the liver, it gets phosphorylated at the one position,
right,
and fructose 1-phosphate upregulates glucokinase, which increases the liver's capacity to process glucose. So the ratio is probably more of like somewhere between 4-1 to 10-1, but it is also useful to an extent when you're doing a lot of high-intensity training to have some fructose in there to replenish liver glycogen. Galactose from lactose will do the same thing. Actually.
Okay, all right, and I we have to take a break. I want to come back. You talked about galactose. Dr. Cordain talked about galactose the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, I want to talk about you talked about very high-intensity exercise routines like CrossFit and so on, but some guys are just going out there and doing a more of a bodybuilding workout. I want to address that as well. So
okay,
we're talking with Matt Lalonde. We're talking about really the application of a paleo style eating in modern day with those of us who train like athletes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. C
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter, urethane series power blocks with FlexPin technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, power blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with power blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power block, the world's best dumbbell.
If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Muscle and joint pain can slow your progress to a screeching halt. That's why I use Kodiak Chiropractic Cream. Kodiak Cream won't hinder muscle growth while reducing pain and inflammation because Kodiak Cream uses only non-pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory agents proven to halt inflammation and relieve pain instantly. Kodiak Cream is great if you suffer from fibromyalgia or osteoarthritis as well. Get your Kodiak Cream today by clicking the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Kodiak Cream. It's the only thing I use to manage pain, and you should too.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Just a reminder, Kodiak Cream, get your free sample at superhumanradio.com. Stuff works great, does not have any NSAIDs in it, no pharmaceuticals whatsoever. All natural pain reliever. You just rub it on the spot. And this isn't like Ben Gay where it just makes your skin hot and makes you forget you're in pain. It actually makes the pain go away. Great stuff. Kodiak Cream. Check it out. Talking with Matt Lalonde this hour, really about the application of the paleo style of eating for those of us who train like athletes. You know, our goals are varied. I want to live long. I want to be healthy. I want to stave off age-related disease. But I also want to be able to perform well in the gym. I want to get stronger. I want progress. And if I can't have them both, I'm really going to be upset. Matt's going to help us here now. Okay, so Matt, you've talked about training protocols that really blend the aerobic and anaerobic thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the guy who just goes in? He's a bodybuilder. You know,
he does
3 sets of bench press. He does 3 sets of flies. I mean, how much glycogen is he really using? Does he really need the high carbohydrate intake to replenish it?
No. And in fact, for some of those folks, I've often, in that case, in that context, recommended a lower carbohydrate diet for the reason that higher fat in the diet is going to reduce the amount of sex hormone-binding globulin, which is then going to increase free testosterone. And that is obviously your friend when you're a bodybuilder. I guess, natural bodybuilder, because if you're injecting anabolics, then it really doesn't matter.
Right, right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about galactose. Dr. Cordain is a staunch opponent of dairy.
Yes.
I happen to be a huge proponent of dairy.
Excellent. I'm somewhere in between. So.
Okay, I'm a big raw milk, unpasteurized milk from, you know, organically raised grass-fed cows.
Mm-hmm.
And the other day on the show, he, you know, was really working hard to because he likes me, he cares about me. He wanted to discourage me. He said, you know, galactose causes cataracts. Milk is just no good for you. We shouldn't be drinking milk. We shouldn't be drinking milk. We shouldn't be drinking milk. So something that you said at the beginning of the show that I'm a big believer, that's epigenetics. If my great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents and great-great-great-grandparents used dairy, am I not better prepared to use dairy then?
It is very likely to, if you are descending from European herders, that your, you know, lactase activity is pretty good. Now, whether or not that's the case, lactase activity will decrease a little bit as you age. And to, you know, get people on board here, lactase is the enzyme that's going to decompose lactose, the disaccharide, into glucose and galactose, the monosaccharide.
But raw milk has lactase in it. Once it's pasteurized, it's destroyed.
It has some lactase in it. I think, so Cordain has come up with a very good hypothesis with regards to beta cellulin, but it remains to be tested. When I look at the big picture, there are a lot of good things in milk, especially the milk of animals that have been fed grass.
Right.
You're going to find a lot of healthy fats, conjugated linoleic acid, transpalmitoleic acid, vaccinic acid, all of these things. If you had one thing to point out as a problem, is its high IGF-1 content.
But why is that? But why is that always a problem? Everybody talks about high IGF-1 being a problem.
Mm-hmm. So IGF-1 is a double-edged sword. It is great for muscle repair. It is great for growth, but it also increases aging. If you have cancer, it will feed. It will promote cancer. So it's not, you know, if you look at the IGF-1 levels of a population, the people with the highest levels tend to die a little bit younger. So it's not necessarily a good idea to be.
But okay, I have to ask you this. We also know that transgenic rats that overproduce growth hormone die much younger than their litter mates. And we also know that individuals who suffer from acromegaly have very short lifespans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, growth hormone produces IGF-1. Is it the IGF-1 that's corollary or causative? Is it possible that it's the growth hormone that's shortening life, not the IGF-1?
Well, if you have growth hormone to boot, then you're going to further augment IGF-1.
Right.
Right. But, you know, let me finish there, because there is some good news here. It turns out that very quick fermentation, maybe even to the order of 3 hours for yogurt, and then, of course, for cheese even longer, completely destroys the IGF-1. So if you like your dairy, if you, you know, just have the fermented kind, and of course make it full fat, because that's where the benefits come from. It's the good fats that are in there, the butter fat. Or have the butter, have the cream, have the sour cream that's fermented, and most of the problematic compounds in the milk will be gone. Also, the fermentation is going to affect the lactose content. If you look at a very well-aged cheese, there's not a whole lot of lactose
right.
going to be left in there.
Right.
And there's plenty of benefits in added vitamin K2, for example. So you are making the whole thing much more nutritious in that regard. So when people, you know, talk about even raw milk, like having a lot of raw milk, I'm like, I wouldn't have a ton of it. But if you're talking about fermented dairy, I'm fine with it. You know, as long as you don't have an autoimmune disease, I'm fine with it.
You know what I did after court? Because you said something at the beginning of the show. You know, if you're not willing to look at the science, or not willing to take opinions and change your position. So
yes.
I told my farmer, I'm going to hold off on the raw milk. I want 5 quarts of raw cream every week. And I've switched to cream because the cream has more fat,
yep.
less lactose in it.
Yep.
And it has, but it definitely increases IGF-1 levels as well.
Yeah. No, maybe not as much, but because the IGF-1 might be in the fat. You know, I'd have to look that up.
I think it is, if I remember
yeah.
correctly. But
yeah.
but you know what? But then again, I use IGF-1 long R3 pre-workout on certain training days. So I guess the milk couldn't nearly be doing what the IGF-1 long R3 is doing if IGF-1 is no good for me.
So I guess the milk is the least of my worries at this
point
in time.
Yeah, so, I mean, what you bring up right now is, you know, the fact that once you are aiming for truly elite performance in any sport, you are going to have to do things nutritionally as well as, you know, physically that are not going to improve your health.
Yeah, that
you're
going
to have
health.
To sacrifice health in order to get that.
Yeah.
And we see this in a lot of CrossFitters that they drink a lot of milk, and I'm like, well, yeah, you know, that's good. It's good for muscle repair and growth and whatnot, but there's a trade-off there. You are aging yourself more rapidly.
Yeah.
You decide. You have the information. You choose what you do with it.
And obviously growth factors that appear in just in whey protein. So whey protein probably is not the greatest thing as well, because that increases IGF-1 levels as well.
My guess is that it depends on if it's isolate or hydrolysate. The hydrolysate process would probably denature IGF-1 is my guess.
Interesting. Interesting. And that's the big buzz right now. All right, let's talk about something else for a second. We know that calories are not the important thing, even though the medical orthodoxy, the dietetic associations, they all focus on calories in, calories out. We know that that's nonsense. If you eat pure calories from sugar, you'll gain weight as opposed to, or gain fat as opposed to somebody who gets all their calories from proteins and fats. But when do calories become relevant? When do they become important to?
They become important once all of your metabolic machinery is working properly and you are seeking to lean out. You have no choice but to curb food intake. And that's the term that I prefer as opposed to speaking of calories, because I'm a chemist and I know that how these things are measured, and they have very little relevance to real life. We are not bomb calorimeters. The food that we eat affects our hormones. It's not just burnt.
Right.
And it's sometimes incorporated into our bodies. So I don't like that term. So in that instance, it's going to matter, and it's really frustrating to me with this attitude in the paleo sphere where you can eat as much as you want as long as it's paleo and you're not going to gain weight or you're going to lose weight, and that's just total hogwash.
Well, also within the performance industry as well, I mean, people think that because they're training very hard that they can just eat anything that they want as much as they want, and it's not going to matter because they're training so hard.
Yeah. You're not going to burn off metabolic syndrome. I'm sorry. Like, if there's a hormonal effect that is detrimental associated with the food that you're consuming, you're not going to burn that off. Sure, you're going to clear a little bit of insulin and some blood sugar when you do high-intensity exercise, but it's not going to address the problem at the root, which is poor nutrition. And even if you've got really good nutrition, you're still going to have to curb your food intake in order to lose weight.
Where did our paleo ancestors find fruit if they lived in extremely cold regions?
Well, something I haven't mentioned that I want to address first and foremost before we start is the reason I started doing this is because I wanted to add a scientific perspective to this thing. Because right now the way that I see it being done is mostly from an observational epidemiology. So the arguments, the whole quote-unquote paleo arguments, are flawed, because they are only observational in nature. You say hunter-gatherers ate this, they didn't have diseases of civilization. So we eat like them, we're going to avoid diseases of civilization. That is a hypothesis. You have to go in the lab and prove that that's true. When you actually look at the science, you can find ways to tweak it. It turns out that they're mostly right, but there's still ways to tweak it. But to think that you are right because of that is completely wrong. Another argument that I see is that people will say, we evolved for millions of years never consuming these foods, so we're not adapted to these foods. Again, incorrect. There's a number of examples in evolution where species find a new source of food and thrive on it. So just because you've never eaten it doesn't mean that you're not adapted to it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at seeds, and I talk broadly about seeds. So when I say seeds, I mean grains, legumes, pseudocereals, nuts, and edible seeds like sunflower seeds. When you look at seeds and the problematic compounds that they contained, the statement that you can make is that there has not been sufficiently strong evolutionary pressure to get human beings to be fully adapted to grains and legumes.
Okay.
That is a much more accurate statement and a difference.
Well, let's go there for a second. I mean, I've railed against legumes and grains because of their lectin content, their anti-nutrient content, not because we are not adapted to them, but because they are pro-inflammatory. What is your position on grains and legumes?
So I'm going to give a talk at the Ancestral Health Symposium, and I'm essentially revealing some of the material that's going to be in
okay.
that talk. As a chemist, I look at every organic molecule individually. Now, there's this thing called thalidomide. It was given to pregnant women to prevent nausea back in the 60s, and it caused some serious birth defects. And
Terrible.
If you know anything about chemistry, it turns out that one of the enantiomers was teratogenic, whereas the other enantiomer, the other mirror image, had the right activity. So a very simple change in a molecule structure can completely change its biological activity. And I look at lectins, saponins, glycoalkaloids in the very same fashion. It turns out that some of the lectins in legumes are deactivated by heat.
Mm.
So if you make your argument specifically only on lectins, and I see some people in the blogosphere, in the paleo blogosphere, make some damning mistakes in that they will indict all lectins as being bad. If I were to say that to a plant biologist, he would consider me a crackpot.
Yeah.
Like completely insane, because most plants, if not all plants, have lectins, and it, most of the times they're benign to human beings, and sometimes they're even beneficial.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so you have to be very careful and consider things one at a time, and when you are looking at that, you have to go further up the chain. Okay, what happens when you cook it? What happens when you ferment it? What happens when you eat it?
Right.
Right? Does it get neutralized, or does it get changed into something that's even more active? It turns out that for certain saponins, you cleave a sugar, and wow, it becomes even more active and problematic. You have to look at that in that way. Otherwise, if you make broad, inclusive statements, like, for example, I got a paleo diet newsletter from Cordain the other day that was like railing off on banana lectin. And I'm like, are you serious? Has it ever been tested properly, shown to survive digestion, shown to bind to enterocytes, show up in the bloodstream, and then get an immune response? Like, do you have all that information? It is really irresponsible to just like take a broad class of compounds and say all of these things are bad. But what's interesting is that when you take a step back and you look at everything we know is problematic, so some of the fructooligosaccharides, saponins, glycoalkaloids, lectins, prolamine proteins, when you take the whole shebang and you look at it, it's like I'm going to find one of those things that's problematic in grains and legumes. And if not, you then look at sustainability of agriculture and nutrient density, and you can make even more arguments against eating those things. So I can't come up with a good reason at the end of the day for eating them, but you have to, follow this very, conservative, logical pathway to getting to your recommendations. Otherwise, you'll come off as an alarmist and no one will pay attention to you.
Yeah.
And the reason why I've come to these conclusions is because I'm in the chemistry department at Harvard, and if I'm to talk to my colleagues about this, I have to be very careful. They would laugh in my face if I were to bring up the caveman argument. They
right.
totally would.
Right. So because you have to substantiate everything by science. That's the
yes.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to touch a base on fruit again, just for a moment.
Yep, absolutely.
We're talking today with Matt Lalonde. And unfortunately, Matt, do you have a website?
No, I refuse to blog.
Matt doesn't have a website. Matt doesn't have a book to sell. Matt just has information. So I tend to believe a guy like him. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it and you'll be a believer too.
The fourth most abundant mineral in the body, magnesium, is responsible for 300 biochemical reactions, normal muscle and nerve function, proper heart rhythm, healthy immune system, and proper hormone levels, but most find taking oral magnesium problematic. Get optimum magnesium levels with transdermal magnesium oil from MikeMahler.com. Magnesium absorbed through the skin can elevate DHEA levels and a variety of other reactions that can increase energy, reduce muscle soreness, lose stomach fat, and ramp up heart health. Go to MikeMahler.com today. That's Mike, M-A-H-L-E-R.com. CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQ10
QQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Branched chain amino acids have been shown to be as powerful as weak anabolic steroids in building muscle and burning fat. BCAAs will increase mitochondria biogenesis and size. The three amino acids in BCAAs pass right from the lining of the stomach directly into the bloodstream and begin flipping the switches for muscle growth immediately. The best BCAAs are at TrueProtein.com. Unlike others, they mix instantly in water. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Go to TrueProtein.com and get your BCAAs.
Introducing AgeForce Testo 100, the first testosterone booster in a transdermal time-release patch. Produced in FDA-certified labs, Testo 100 bypasses digestion and delivers its testosterone-boosting formula directly into the bloodstream. That's a huge advantage over oral testosterone supplements. Testo 100 patches raise testosterone levels throughout the day to elevate libido, energy, and maximize muscle-building, fat-burning effects without suppressing normal testosterone production. For a limited time, Superhuman Radio listeners can save 50% off Testo 100 by going to ageforce.com and using the coupon code SHR4. Don't wait. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use code SHR4 and save 50% now.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour is Matt Lalonde. We're talking about applications of the Paleolithic style of eating. Hopefully someday everyone will eat this way and abandon the methods of nutrition that are being promoted today that are actually leading to a lot of the disease in this country. Is that a misstatement for me to say?
I think that they are involved in the promotion of a lot of disease and causing a lot of diseases, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Fruit.
Yep.
You know, this is one of those things, you know, fructose turns to fat, it becomes triglycerides first, it's evil, it's no good, you shouldn't eat a lot of fruit if you're trying to lose body fat. Then there are individuals out there who say that's crazy, you have to incorporate fruit into your diet, fruit is important. Where do you stand on fruit?
Well, first and foremost, this is one place where I find the whole paleo argument fails, because there are people that just go nuts on fruit. I shouldn't use the word nuts. They eat fruit excessively, just not to confuse people. They eat fruit excessively, and then I start thinking, do you have any idea what fruit used to look like back then? Because we have been selecting for sweeter and sweeter fruit over time through agriculture. What we were eating back then is, you know, those little crab apples you can find in the wild?
Yeah, that tastes terrible. That's
what our ancestors were eating, okay? And the bananas, they used to be a quarter of the size and mostly fiber, kind of like if they were green. I mean, we are just not getting that much pure sugar or fructose from fruit back then. But then, like I alluded to earlier, depending on where you're at metabolically, athletically, it can be useful in certain circumstances. But there is a lot of confusion when it comes to fructose. First and foremost, I can tell you I have challenged many fruitarians to getting blood work done, and every time the blood sugar levels are through the roof. It's like you are pre-diabetic by eating just fruit.
Right.
The problem with fructose is that we sometimes eat it in exclusion of other nutrients. So we sometimes eat pure fructose, whereas with other things like palmitic acid, you don't just eat palmitic acid. It comes with other fatty acids that actually change its effect on the human body. So when you eat a ton of fructose, it mostly gets processed by the liver, then by the kidneys, and also by the fat cells to some extent. So you're looking at 50-70% liver, and then the rest kidneys, fat cells, and sperm cells also use fructose. The problem with the liver is that once, you know, like I said, it turns on glucokinase, so the liver is going to take in more glucose and fructose, more carbohydrate than it typically does. You're going to fill up liver glycogen quite fast because the tank isn't that big. And then once that happens, the rest of the stuff goes into the Krebs cycle, where it gets turned into citric acid, and actually, well, it'll get turned into NADH FADH2, and those things are going to go through oxidative phosphorylation and eventually make some ATP. The problem is that if you overdo it, citrate overflows out of the system, and that goes through de novo lipogenesis. De novo lipogenesis then transforms citrate or citric acid, depending on whether it's charged or not, into something called palmitic acid. It'll be palmitoyl-CoA that's then going to be packaged into triglycerides and shipped out in a form of VLDL. The problem with fructose is that there's no control mechanism. When it comes to glucose, there's a rate-determining step there in making, in the diphosphorylation, in making the monophosphate from the diphosphate, the fructose 1,6 bisphosphate. There's a rate-determining step there, and it is regulated by the amount of ATP and citrate that's in the system. So if the liver cells see a lot of ATP and citrate, they say, okay, you have to slow this down. Whereas fructose can get around that pathway by making dihydroxyacetone phosphate in another through the aldolases in another way. So it is particularly bad in that sense, and I'm talking about excess overconsumption.
So you eat fruit, right?
No, I don't. I just prefer to get my carbohydrate from, sweet potatoes, stuff like that.
Okay, because I avoid fruit like the pox because I feel like it's going to just cause fat storage and other problems, and I just don't need fruit. And I also don't miss fruit. It's not like I have to struggle. Oh, I wish I could have, a banana. I wish I could have some grapes. I mean, I'll have fruit periodically if it's there. I'm at someone's house. There's a bowl of fruit. I may grab some. Cherries or something, but it's not like I eat a lot of it, and I try to stay away from it.
Okay. I like to get my carbohydrate from potatoes and sweet potatoes. The potatoes are pure glucose, pure starch. The sweet potatoes do have some fructose in there, but the load tends to be lower than your average fruit, unless we're talking about lemons and limes. You know, if you really were to go through the breakdown, you would see that maybe some vegetables occasionally have a little bit more fructose than certain fruits, but it all depends on the amount of detail you want to go into, but I'm referring specifically to like excess fructose carbohydrate using, high fructose fruits that your typical go-tos like pears and bananas and watermelon and stuff like that, grapes and dried fruit.
And then which leads to your initial comment about the fruit of yesterday and the fruit of today leads me to a conversation I had with Leslie Aiello from the Winogrand Foundation one day. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, all this hullabaloo about paleo-style eating, it's impossible to eat paleo with the food that's available today.
True, absolutely true.
And so you feel that way as well, huh?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I mean, it is very difficult to find pork and chicken that has not been fed grain. Even if you go to, a farm that's on eatwild.org or something like that, it is very, very difficult. So I think that is correct. I mean, you can do the best we can, but just because they were doing it that way doesn't mean that it's the right way. What I like to do is look at what they were doing right, take all the good stuff and leave out the bad stuff. The Tarahumara Indians are huge lushes and they smoke. Am I going to do that if I want to run like them? Like, no, it's flawed logic, right? It's observational. I walk into the gym and I see a guy that's ripped and he's doing, some stupid exercise. Am I going to start doing that exercise thinking it's going to make me look like that guy? No, there's a bunch of other variables that could explain that outcome.
Right.
But I would like to just finish the conversation on fructose. So once that stuff gets transformed into palmitic acid, while fructose gets phosphorylated and excessively phosphorylated, there's some uric acid that gets created. And, that excess uric acid or hyperuricemia is involved in gout. And it actually, if you look at the work of Richard Johnson, some of its effects are, very representative of the metabolic syndrome. I disagree with Richard Johnson if what he's indicating is that it's all due to uric acid. I don't think that's what's indicating, but I'm never of the type of it's all due to this. And if you hear someone say this problem is all due to this. Human beings are multivariate complex organisms. That simply cannot be true. So you've got some uric acid that's produced, and you've got some palmitic acid that's produced. And the palmitic acid, the problem there is that your body is getting the signal that you're on a high-fat diet, but really you're on a high-carbohydrate diet because you ate sugar and there's still glucose in the bloodstream. So palmitic acid signals the turning on of insulin resistance in order to spare glucose for the brain. But in reality, it's not necessary because there's plenty of glucose around.
It fools
you. Confusion.
It fools you.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. So there's a confusion going on there. What's unfortunate is that a lot of researchers are not doing us a favor. And there's research by Axon and Axon and others. There's one that I was just reading recently about an inflammasome where they take mice and they put them on a high-fat diet and they say, look, they got insulin resistance. And I'm like, well, yes, that's not surprising. For one, your diet was low in omega-3 and it had plenty of trans fats in it and et cetera, et cetera. But a high-fat diet should cause an individual to become insulin resistant in order to spare glucose for the brain. But the metabolic syndrome is not characterized by insulin resistance alone. It's insulin resistance, hyperinsulinemia, hyperglycemia, hyperuricemia, high blood pressure. All of these things come together, and a high-fat diet doesn't cause that. But I shouldn't say high-fat diet because, you know, this is a point I made to Gary Tobbs the other day. Like, you have to talk about food quality. I could be drinking corn oil and be on a high-fat diet.
Right.
Would I be healthy? Like, no. Right?
Right.
So there's confounding factors there in high-fat, and there's huge confounding factors in high-carbohydrate. Is it the starch in the grains that's the problem? No. It's the fact that the grains come with fructooligosaccharides, lectins, prolamine proteins, and all of that stuff. And then the same thing, you look at fruit. Is it the glucose in the fruit that's a problem? No, it's the fructose. So there's a bunch of confounding factors there. So I don't like to use the term high-carbohydrate diet. I just say a high-starch or glucose diet, which I still think is fine. But now the interesting thing is that once you do have metabolic syndrome, which could be caused just by fructose overconsumption alone, if you
right.
were to artificially just give someone agave nectar 200 grams every day, you would do this within the span of 2 weeks, then their glucose tolerance goes down. So imagine that. They can no longer tolerate glucose because you gave them something else.
Wow.
And this is where the linear logic of a lot of nutritionists completely fails, like fat makes you fat, et cetera, et cetera. It turns out that this something else caused the problem, and you have to be cognizant of that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that this individual will never tolerate glucose again. Sometimes when the damage has been done for a long time, there's beta cell apoptosis in the pancreas, which limits.
Right.
Yeah, so in that case, you know, those people are going to have to go a little bit lower glucose or starch over the long term.
Right.
But there's some people I see just, you know, completely take out all of the crap, all the junk food, and by junk food I mean grains and legumes.
They become carbohydrate intolerant.
Yeah, they can become carbohydrate intolerant, even though it was a specific carbohydrate, either fructose or some of the anti-nutrients in the grains that did the trick, and not necessarily the glucose itself. The same is true, I think, of protein. There's a lot of people that say, well, don't increase your protein intake. That's hard on the kidneys. No. In order for you to eat more protein, it is going to increase uric acid, but it's also going to increase uric acid excretion by the kidneys, unless your kidneys are damaged for some reason,
right.
At which point they can't adapt. And then it's a bad idea for you to eat more protein. But it's not the protein that caused the problem.
Right.
And actually, it's been shown by Richard Johnson and his coworkers that fructose can be a huge problem when it comes to the kidneys. Remember, I talked about the fact that about 30% of that fructose load goes to the kidneys.
Right, right.
So you have to be careful with that.
All right, let's do this. Let's take our last commercial break.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, I want you to weigh in on GMO. Since
okay.
you're a scientist, I'm sure you have an opinion. We're talking with Matt Lalonde, where we're talking about Paleolithic styles of eating, especially for those of us who train hard. And when we come back, I want to hear what Matt's opinion is of genetically modified organisms. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at IronMagLabs.com. Don't wait too long because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
Finally, a Bovine supplement right from the source used in the original study. Phytoserms 347 is here. Bovine natalensis has been shown to dramatically increase testosterone levels in clinical research, but sourcing the real ingredient has proven near impossible. Now, Ruthless Supplements has done the impossible. Each capsule of Phytoserms 347 has the exact amount of pure Prolensis TM Bovine natalensis required to produce a dramatic increase in total and free testosterone. You can't get this anywhere else but at Ruthless Supplements. Visit RLSSupplements.com today.
Jumping higher, left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Shake that thing, miss. Can I shake that thing, miss? And I better shake that.
Welcome back
thing,
to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Matt Lalonde. Interestingly enough, somebody posted something on my wall. I have to find it. Somebody posted something on my wall, Matt. Tom Furman's photo. It looks. It says Steve Bowser from CrossFit Affliction commented on Tom Furman's photo, and it's a photo of what looks like a Maasai native who is just, it looks like his skin is turned to leather. He's skinny, and it says, eat paleo food like a hunter-gatherer and look like this guy. Brilliant logic. I'm having oatmeal for breakfast tomorrow.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So again, completely flawed logic, observational study, observation study of N equals one. That's horrible. Yeah. That does not stand the rigors of science.
You know, and there's a guy that posted something on YouTube. I don't want to get off the subject, but there's a guy who posted something on YouTube of a bunch of paleo individuals, and I don't know, maybe he was showing this guy promotes paleo, that guy promotes paleo. Look at the little bit of flab on his stomach. This guy's got no muscle, and it's like,
it's pathetic.
They're so opposed to the paleo style of eating, and I find that it's vegetarians and vegans who are most opposed to it, which you were one at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Whenever I give my seminar, I start out prefacing saying, this is not about high carb, low carb, omnivorism, vegetarianism, or carnivorism. That is your choice. I'm just going to discuss food quality, and then you decide what you want to do with that. And then I think that you can be a much healthier vegetarian by taking some aspects of paleo into your diet. Now, of course, that doesn't include meat, but let's say you can include a bit more fermented dairy, you can include more eggs. include fat, for the love of God, please, so you can get some fat-soluble vitamins out of the food that you eat. So whenever you cook greens, you know, put some butter on there and stuff like that, you know, coconut oil and whatnot. And then, you know, go ahead with the potatoes. Just peel them, because the alpha-chaconine and alpha-solanine are actually in the peel, and those are
problematic. I like the red potatoes better, because they have slightly less sugar content to fiber content.
Okay.
Have you heard that?
Yeah, but the potatoes do have a decent, not decent, they have some complete protein in them at least, so I do recommend them for vegetarians. And you know,
okay,
there's
some people that are running experiments
where they're running off of potatoes alone.
But you say peel them. You should peel your
potatoes. Yeah, you should probably peel them. If, you know, that's almost always a good idea. There's some people that will argue that, you know, there's a lot of nutrients in the peel. That's true, but that's where all the protective compounds that are synthesized by the plants will reside, or most of them. So if you can peel it, you should.
Okay. The world is getting more and more influenced by genetically modified foods. Monsanto announced yesterday that they were going to move forward on genetically modified wheat. They say that it'll probably take them 10 years to reach their goal, because wheat is so complex. What's your opinion of all this GMO stuff? I mean, looking at what you know about...
I take a very pragmatic view of that, very much like I do of the whole oil and sustainable energy. So there's some people that will get into the whole global warming argument, and is it really happening or not? And I kind of scratch my head and I look at it and I say, okay, our coal reserves and oil reserves are limited. We should probably be studying renewable energy whether we like it or not, because
right,
we're going to need it in the future. End of statement. That's it.
Right.
You know, that you can't argue with
why
that.
Why hang your hat on something that is finite, that you know it's finite?
Yeah.
Why fight over it?
I look at the genetically modified foods, and the greater majority of them are grains and legumes. So I don't care. Like, I'm not going to eat those. I'm telling you that those should disappear. Legume agriculture might be sustainable. They do add nitrogen to the soil. That's why soy is used in rotation with cornfields. But grain agriculture is, you know, arguably not sustainable. So it has to go.
So,
I don't care.
So it doesn't matter. So your opinion is, look, they're not hurting me because I don't eat that stuff anyway.
Yeah, and they have to. I think they have to go no matter what.
What about GMO sugar beets, which are very prominent now?
Yeah, so then you get into like things like tomatoes and other vegetables that will be genetically modified. And in that case, to me, it depends on how it occurred. There's a couple processes that you can use. One of them is that you're just going to take the seeds and submit them to radiation. It just like jumbles up the genes a little bit. That tends to be a little closer to what would actually happen in nature. Same is true when you crossbreeds. So I'm not too worried about that. Like, listen, if you're a guy, you're a woman, you guys have sex and you have a child, that's genetic engineering, okay?
Right.
But when they start introducing genes from one species, like fish genes into tomatoes and stuff like that.
Which they're doing now, right?
What they are doing, that makes me a little bit nervous. You know,
I always think of the movie The Fly.
Exactly. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, push it that way. But the problem, the reason why it makes me nervous is that we don't know with confidence what the outcome of that experiment will be.
Yeah.
We are running an experiment. I'm not saying it's going to be bad. I just don't know if it's going to be good.
I have to believe you are not a proponent of soy protein.
No, absolutely not.
Is it because of the legume connection, or is there something else that you don't like about it?
It's still has a significant amount of problems associated with it, but you're encouraging an industry that I simply cannot support.
Once again. You know what was interesting? I was did a show with Dr. Scott Connolly one day, and he said that he attended a lecture one time, and the gentleman that was talking about at the lecture was talking about soy, and he said, mm-hmm. you know, all these things that people embrace soy for, the phytoestrogens and so on, were actually a result of evolutionary pressure to keep soy alive. So what soy does basically is it increased these phytoestrogens so that the animals that would eat it, their libido would drop, their litter rates would go down. What better way to end an enemy by killing it off? You know, it's off, no offspring, no more enemy. And we embrace that. It's like that's what soy did to protect itself. And we're going, oh, this is great stuff. It's got phytoestrogen in it. I mean, it's insane.
So, yeah,
it's insane.
When it comes to plants, of the plant matter that I do recommend people eat, I always say, please cook it. It will deactivate some of the defense chemicals that are in the plants, and it will also increase the digestibility. Then when you get to things like grains and legumes, you can ferment them and increase the digestibility of the protein and maybe even destroy some of the other problematic compounds if you want, but the cost-to-benefit analysis just doesn't make sense to me anymore.
Where do you stand on raw meats? There's a large movement growing now, eating raw meats, raw chicken. As a matter of fact, there's a gentleman on Facebook who has his lunch posted. It's 1.5 pounds of raw chicken, 36 raw oysters, 2 pounds of tomatoes and papaya.
Yeah, so I get all of my meat from community-supported agriculture, small farm in Hardwick, Massachusetts called Chestnut Farms. And I visited the farm, and I know that all of the beef is, all the cows are on pasture. They eat grass exclusively. So the meat that I get that is beef from that CSA, I will eat raw. One of the arguments that you can make there is that the benefit of having this kind of meat is that it has a better fatty acid profile, but some of those fatty acids are polyunsaturated. Conjugated linoleic acid, for example, and then the omega-3s.
Which means heat is going to...
It might affect them.
Right.
Yeah, it can, depending on how high the heat. Now, you can slow cook everything, too, and still get plenty of the benefits. But I just enjoy, you know, raw beef in general. When it comes to the pork and the chicken, those were not... those do get grain, like I said, nonetheless. And even, like, Joel Salatin feeds his chickens grain, okay?
Right.
So there, for one, I try to minimize my consumption of that, and I find that the taste of that meat raw, I've tried it, is not all that great.
Right, right.
So I would never eat raw meat from a supermarket as well. I just, the source has to be trusted, and I know that this is butchered in a small shop, a small facility in the area and whatnot. So I do it. I'm not going to recommend it. If the source is clean, I think that it can be okay, and you know the fat is definitely not going to get oxidized under those circumstances.
What about the individuals that promote, and I eat raw meat periodically. Mm-hmm. I don't eat it around people that I love because it grosses them out.
Yes.
But yeah. I mean, and interestingly enough, I can eat a pound of grass-fed beef, mm-hmm. Ground beef, 15% fat. I know, I love it actually. And my stomach doesn't even feel full. If I ate that same amount of cooked beef, I would be bloated for hours. So something tells me that my body likes it better. But with that being said, what about the argument that cooking denatures the protein and therefore we're not getting everything we can? Is that true? The digestive system denature the protein?
Cooking does denature the protein. That doesn't mean that it's worse, and you might make some arguments that it's easier to digest in certain instances, and such is truly the case for plants. Plant components are always going to be harder to digest, and that's because plants can't run away from predators. So they have to make, so everything about them has to be more difficult to digest. The predators can't get at them so easily. That's not the case for animals, of course, because they've got teeth, claws, and they can run. So that you tend to have a, you know, more easily to digest and fewer defense chemicals.
Okay.
With the exception of, like, you know, things like puffer fish, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go.
What was the question again? I think I lost.
About denaturing protein from cooking.
Oh, that's right.
You know, people.
You can make an argument that that's actually a good thing when it comes to eggs, for example, because you're going to denature the avidin that could bind the biotin. So, you know, sometimes it's a plus, sometimes it's a minus. You have to look at each case individually.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, you know, denaturing sounds bad because you're ruining nature, but really you're just creating some sulfide bonds.
Well, also, I've had guests on the show that said, look, your digestive acids denature the protein.
Yes,
denaturing is unfolding.
Yeah.
You might as well start unfolding it, you know, yeah, ahead of time.
Yep, so they denature it and they decompose it. They take the protein and they decompose it to amino acids.
What do you think the benefits of eating raw, other than the not changing the fat structure, what do you think the benefits of eating raw meat are? What about the enzymes that stay intact? Do you think there's a benefit from those?
Possibly. I would have to do some more research on that and to give you like an educated answer.
Okay. Listen, Matt, we've come to the end of the interview and I have more questions for you. We have to have you back on sometime, okay?
Sure.
This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad that you made time to come on Superhuman Radio. Thanks so much.
No problem.
And usually this is where I plug your book, your website, your blog, but I don't have any of that stuff. So those of you who know Matt, give him a hug. There you go. Next time you see him at a CrossFit event, get up and give him a hug. Say, I heard you on Superhuman Radio. I know you got nothing to sell. Let me give you a hug. That's all.
All right, listen, Matt, thanks so much for being on the show.
All right, no problem.
All right. All right, so there you go. Another 2 hours you've wasted listening to Superhuman Radio. I want to thank Eric Potratch for coming on and talking about non-surgical approaches to ridding yourself of chesticles, or as the medical industry likes to call them, gynecomastia. And, of course, Matt Lalonde for talking about the paleo style of eating. We'll have another great episode for you tomorrow, so tune in then. I'm out of here.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.